Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, darlings. Bonjour, mes amis. Ça va bien? I hope we're all ça va bien-ing, darlings. This is Mummy, Sybil Brunson. I'm glad to be here tonight with you. Fall is definitely in the air, isn't it? Even for our friends down south of the border, it's getting cooler. The weather is changing. We are broadcasting to you live. Mummy is back in Manhattan. We are broadcasting to you live from the revolving ballroom of the Café Berlin, high atop the Chrysler Building, right in the heart of Art Deco New York City. It's a wonderful night. Beautiful weather, gorgeous weather, a little chilly one day, a little bit too warm one day, but it's definitely a glorious fall. And I am here with my wonderful producer, my produciatrix, or producerette, whatever you want to call her. And she is also my muse. She is my stanchion against the insanity of the world. She is my high priestess who banishes bad spirits and bad smells. It's interesting when bad spirits come about with bad smells. It's I'm making myself laugh now. It's none other than Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mummy. That's a spectacular intro. And I got to tell you, my life has lifted and a lot lighter since I've come to know Mummy.
And my life has lifted considerably, amazingly, incrementally. Children at home who don't know what incremental means, look it up in the dictionary, Mummy. Write down words that Mummy says, and then at the end of the show, we'll look them up together. And by the way, darlings, that's incremental, not excremental. That's a different word for a different occasion, maybe about politics, but we'll talk about that later. It's incremental, and that's what Gwendolyn has done for me, incrementally improved and enriched and expanded not only my life, but my consciousness. Because she, in addition to everything else that she does, she is, in fact, the founder of DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. They're our sponsor every week, and we've been on the air for over a year now. DaughtersOfIsis.com, and that's all one word. Do check them out during the broadcast on your laptop or your computer. They have wonderful, wonderful fragrances. It's not just a perfume shop, darlings. It's an emporium of wisdom and spirituality. Gwendolyn, tell everybody at home a little bit about what the DaughtersOfIsis.com, what their wonderful work is.
Well, basically, it's aromacology, and that is I blend the essential oils and scents of different ancestral cultures to express their traditions in fragrance. So there are useful tools for all kinds of things, for inner journey work, for shifting your mood, for bringing about a new energy, for drawing money. That's a biggie. anything like that.
But
right now,
make no mistake, Donald Trump is not one of her customers. Donald Trump's vast fortune has not come from working with Gwendolyn, although his 5 bankruptcies, maybe that's indicative of the fact that he hasn't been working with Gwendolyn and the fact that he's actually gone bankrupt 5 times. So maybe the money is all illusion. Maybe it's monopoly money. And that's what's going on. But I want to remind people at home, this is not just a fragrance, an aromacology. It's not just herbs and flowers and barks and leaves and plant products that are being used. This is also combined with history and with cultural anthropology. It's also Gwendolyn studies the civilizations themselves and how they applied their regional herbs, flowers, etc., and how they combine them, and how they compare from one part of the world to another, one culture to another, one history to another. Would that be accurate, Gwendolyn, to say?
That's very, very good. That's I was a student of Joe Campbell's. It changed my life, and I explored. Of course, I always was in and out of the occult shops when I was just a little girl. And so spirit, the spirit of things, our ancestors are, we are our own ancestors. When the indigenous people talk about our business here is to ensure the coming generations. It's like, you know, reciting the golden rule or what the old hermetics and ceremonialists will say, which is do what thou wilt, but harm none. It's like you, what you are doing is you are ensuring your own next ride on the merry-go-round, you know? So basically it's all about, you know, when we're doing something for somebody else, when we're being of service, it's the best thing. Don't you get the best stuff when you make people laugh, when you
make people look.
And when people, we're here to serve one another, and that's our great joy and evolution, and no more so and more critically than right now. And you know what? You always ask me about something to recommend, and I was ready for you tonight because
I'm thrilled.
I'm
like a child on Christmas morning right now. I'm literally, excuse me, I'm having a bladder control problem right now. I'm actually, I peed a little bit in my evening gown. I am actually like a child on Christmas morning. I'm so excited. What is the fragrance you're going to surprise us with?
Well, it's not such a surprise, but it's the blend itself is a cold Bulgarian lavender flower with some tuberose and wild chamomile. And basically, it's all about, it's very high energy. It has some homeopathic essences in it that are very rescuing and connective to above and below so that we feel grounded, but we're lifted. And it's called Heart Chakra Mist. And it promotes the balance of our emotions and grounds your self-expression so that even though you're going through trying times, you always are grounded in your truer feelings. It brings rescue too from panic, and there's so much emotional stress in the world, but in this country right now, that I thought heart chakra has to, it opens the heart when we're closed, you know, off, and allows us to anchor to home and to our families and to the people we love. And it opens the door to relief from anxiety. And it's stimulates an aromatic love. That's what it's all about. So
that's fabulous. That's wonderful.
That's my thought is heart chakra, and I've been blasting it around me for about 3 days now. So it's doing a pretty
and,
good job.
And I wish I had the gallon jug size because the headlines lately and what's been on the news has just Gwendolyn and I have been shaking our heads in amazement at the headlines for the last year and a half. And every week we do the show, we say, well, it can't get worse than this, or it can't get more news. It can't get more, there can't be more news packed in to the last 24 hours than there has been this past 24. And the news cycle, all we've seen is that every talking head, every commentator has said that we literally are reaching the core of the sun now when it comes to the temperature of the politics. It, short of drooling and putting, short of having his head spin and projectile vomiting, green vomit, short of putting, climbing up the stairs with his limbs broken, and it's like all I can say is Caligula was finished off in a dirty back alleyway of the palace by his guards. His imperial guards finally got so sick of him, and the fact that he had literally purged everyone over and over, no matter how loyal people were, no matter how much of a sycophant each person was, they always had to be chewed up in the wood chipper of Caligula's insanity. So there was nothing you could do. There was nothing you could do. You couldn't give enough money. If you had too much money, he would use you up and take your estate away. If you were giving your money to him and lavishing gifts on him and bankrupting yourself, God forbid you were bankrupt, because then you were useless because you didn't have any money, and why would you be at a dinner party with him? It's like there was always an excuse to chew up every single person around him. And the guards finally were at the point where they were getting to be the highest paid people in government, because he had to do that, because he had to have some hard shell around him that would protect him from assassins and from poisoning. And what finally happened was they looked at each other and they basically said, this has gone beyond the beyond the beyond the beyond the beyond. We can't keep going to different people's houses and murdering them and their children and their wives and children. We can't keep doing these horrible spectacles because it's gone too far. And finally, he was disposed of. The same thing with Hitler in Germany and Berlin.
He humiliated people. That was his big thing, was humiliation. And if you take a look at the parallel you've just drawn to our moment in America right now, there's not a very far reach from that, because all Trump does is exactly what you were saying. And it goes into the humiliation he thinks he's getting away with by name calling and schoolyard bullying. If he could bury the Christians in the circus and bring the knife boats out to cut their heads off, he would do it. I mean, he has, his delusions have gone so far that people are like, I saw a riot explode on Twitter today, and I went, whoa, I only followed this guy because, you know, I wanted to know what was going on. And I'm like, I am unfollowing this. It was like,
What's interesting is that as bad as it is, we live just enough by the rule of law that we don't have the same purges that Stalin and Hitler had, where they would simply chew up people in the government and, you know, exterminate vast portions. But we have we have been xenophobic towards the Mexicans, towards any Latin, Latino people.
Oh, yeah.
We are xenophobic towards our own black population. We are xenophobic about certainly any Islamic people, and Hindus and Buddhists. Most Americans lump Hindus, Buddhists, and Sikhs and Muslims and all the sub-denominations of those religions into one big thing. Oh, they wear a turban. They got a dot in their head. They're brown. I don't know. They're all the same thing. What Americans don't realize is that the Muslim religion has as many divisive subsets as the Christian religion has. Catholics and Protestants warred with each other and burned each other at the stake for hundreds of years. And we had struggles between them as recently as the 1970s in Northern Ireland. So Americans don't care. If you're Muslim, you're all the same thing. You're all whatever that is. And then what's a Hindu? It's a Muslim with a dot. They don't care. They don't understand that all of these people around the world have their own struggles, their own reformations, their own, you know, their own amazing histories and disturbances. And so the one thing that we're dealing with is that we're seeing that for the first time, and I'm going to say this because everyone at home, Gwendolyn and I lived through Nixon.
Yeah.
Nixon, by comparison, was a
statesman
compared to this. First of all, as flawed as he was highly intelligent. He didn't reject learning. He didn't reject curiosity or anything like that. That's why to the day he died, he was consulted by statesmen from around the world. They might have tiptoed onto his estate and didn't want people to know, but he was considered to be an expert on many things. No one will ever, ever consult with this person. This person is fit to only be a microscope slide about syphilis, tertiary syphilis, in 25 years. Look at Jimmy Carter, falls down, bashes his head in, gets 14 stitches and a black eye, building homes at 95 years of age in Atlanta, Georgia.
And gets up and does it again the next day. I adore that. I'm so proud that was my first vote.
Well, it's just, I just think it's amazing to me. And so what I posted tonight for our show, for listeners. And by the way, I haven't been doing any of the things. I want to remind you all that you can call in 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Call in and chat with us. I've been saying that every week, call in and chat with us. And people do sort of, but I get private messages all week on my Facebook and on my email, and people are so split. Some people want brownie recipes. Some people want, you know, stories about kitties, and some people want us to burn the town down with politics. Gwendolyn and I are still trying to figure out what people would like to listen to. But I must say that, to give us credit, over the last few weeks, except for last week when our server had a meltdown suddenly, just minutes before we were going on the air,
yeah,
we have been servicing the happy-go-lucky people. And the problem is that the happy-go-lucky people, they're not calling in, they're not telling us what they, you know, are happy about or whatever. So we're sort of figuring out our way here again. I posted today a picture of Patty McCormick in the iconic role of Rhoda Penmark, and she's in the middle of her temper tantrum with her mother in the movie The Bad Seed, that wonderful 1950s melodrama. It's almost considered a horror film, technically, about a psychopathic little girl who is bad from birth. She was not raised badly. It was quite a story at the time, because people after World War II were exploring how much of evil is born and how much of it is initiated by an upbringing. And people were asking these existential questions very heavily after World War II because of the horror of World War II, that millions and millions and millions of people were killed whimsically at the wish of, you know, dictators around the country. So they were asking these questions, and Maxwell Anderson wrote that play, The Bad Seed, exploring how could a little girl who's so cute and everything in the suburb suddenly become a serial murderer, and like a seriously bad serial killer. And so when I posted that today, I said, is someone in your life having a tantrum or, you know, next door in the next cubicle, you know, on the headlines? I posed that question. I happen to have had to go to Apple today to get my computer, my laptop retooled. And literally, we sat next to a tantruming three-year-old baby stroller who howled loud enough for the entire Apple store to be, you know, ricocheted with the sound of this child yowling, and the mother was doing nothing about it. She wasn't putting a pacifier in his mouth. She wasn't doing it, and she was just more determined to get whatever, her cell phone, so that she could, I don't know, Twitter or whatever. And it went on and on and on and on. It was amazing. It was a real commentary on our lives today. A parent listening to their child yowling and being more focused on the cell phone than on the fact that there were 150 people around her, like staring in disbelief. But I'm going to pose the question. Gwendolyn and I are going to chat, but please call in 323-784-9639. Our operators are standing by. My question tonight is, when things are at a tantrum level for you, what do you do? You can't rely on mom to, you know, get you a pacifier or to, you know, lift you out of the baby carriage or put you back in the baby carriage or change your diaper. What is it that you do to stop that screaming id that's inside you? That's where the word idiot comes from, by the way. That uncontrolled, no holds barred, no boundaries, part of our primitive brain, the id, where we simply stamp our foot and we want what we want, what we want, what we want. We have people in government that are doing that. They simply want what they want, what they want. And unfortunately, we have millions of enabling parents standing around letting you know, an orange child shriek and howl and yowl and burn the house down. So we, as grownups, we try not to do that. Folks at home, call in, let us know what you do when your id starts to be like, I want, I want, I want. Gwendolyn, what do you do? What when your demons start to like bubble up, what is your first thing to do?
Well, I do have my share of outbursts, but I realize right away that my temper has taken me, and what I'll do is sit down and ground visually to the planet, and then I used to, this is interesting, I used to use white sage to cleanse the whole area and all the bad vibes away and do my best to focus on releasing my anger and allowing the universe to handle it or do what I could for a solution. I no longer am going to be using white sage because we have farmed it. It's, you can only hand pick it. It's only wild crafted, although there are a couple of sustainable farms of it in Southern California. Most of it is wildcrafted. It's been wildcrafted to the edge of extinction. And I know, Mummy, as a gardener, you can appreciate this and the plants,
right,
you know, cry for,
yeah,
help. So I will no longer, and I put white sage and sweetgrass oils on the shelves of most, you know, in the early 90s. And I am going to the next best sage who is of equal value. They call it black sage over here, some, but it's mugwort. It's an artemisia, a sage. And I'm going,
right,
to be using mugwort with my sweetgrass, and I'm going to phase out when I'm through with the last of my white sage because the plant allies are screaming, you're killing us and we're not going to work for you if you don't work for us. You have to love to tend. You have to love to use, too. When you see these wonderful people who, like when they opened the Native American Indian Museum in Washington, they had several medicine people with the chiefs there who used the sage to smudge. And most people understand the word smudge these days. They understand that it's a smoke that produces a vibration and scent that permeates negativity,
right,
and brushes it off. Well, the nations of California, the Native American nations, have asked, especially the metaphysical New Age community, to stop using white sage until it recuperates, and that could be a generation. So I, being who I am, will no longer be working with white sage in that,
right,
capacity, except to bless it and thank it for the years of service it's rendered for me. I just need to get that in there.
I want to point out to people that when you began speaking, you talked about, you know, that you sometimes would have your own meltdowns, your own, you know,
mm-hmm,
yowl festivals. So,
mm-hmm,
there's a big difference between expressing anger and
having a tantrum.
There's a difference between a tantrum. Yeah. There's a difference between a tantrum and someone drawing the line finally and saying no and being loud and saying this has got to stop. There's a total difference. And of course, part of being an adult is always questioning how much this emotional outburst is a tantrum and how much this emotional outburst,
yeah,
is a well-deserved a vomiting of poison. Because,
yeah,
I spent much of my life swallowing my anger, swallowing my protests against, you know, people being, against wrongdoing. And, you know, that had its own toxicity. You know,
yeah,
unexpressed anger is depression. When you become depressed, that's because you haven't been releasing your anger. And it's a real balancing act, because if you are someone who does not express your anger or release it, you'll be surrounded by people who will say things like, well, now you don't want to burn bridges. No, you don't want to burn bridges. But you also can't continue, you know, through your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and into the box, you know, at your own funeral, not having stood up for yourself, or, you know, you've got to know at what point it's fair for you to say, this will not work. We're all going through that in different ways. We're going through it as aging Americans. We're going through it as gay Americans. We're going through it as women. We're certainly minorities are going through it. Everyone is going through it in different ways. Even Donald Trump's followers are going through it. That's the excuse they're giving for the last 3 years, is that they've been stood on, they've been stepped on, they've been climbed over, they've been forgotten and disenfranchised. Well, you know what? Let's look at that. Let's hear their arguments and their what they're saying, and let's be open to what is fair and be firm with what is not fair. It's one thing for white Americans to be fussing about black Americans, and yet we have to remember that we imported them as animals and as furnishings starting in 1600. So, and it doesn't make any difference if there were black chieftains and tribes that in Africa that were selling their own people to us. That's a different issue, and yes, that's valid. But the bottom line is that here's a whole race of people that now numbers in the millions, and what is it, 0.001% of them came over as happy Europeans in 1700, never having been enslaved. Most black Americans in this country come from slave stock, and their ancestry is one of having been put upon. And so we are going to have to balance our dismay or dislike or everything with what their cultural history has been, what their options have been. And they know that they have to rise above that, and they know that they have to try and raise their children to be excellent and all of those things. They know that, and we have to make sure that we nurture that garden. We have to make sure that we are people that go into that garden and are fertilizers and nurturers and are abundance enablers. And not that we are people who go into that garden and trample what's there and poison the soil and salt the earth and deny the water and deny the sunlight and all of that. We've got to be more circumspect, and we have to be more circumspect with everyone. I live in New York City. This town is immigrants and has been for hundreds of years. You look into the eyes of an immigrant taxi cab driver or an immigrant waiter or an immigrant dry cleaner person behind the counter, they are so eager to be a part of this journey. You see it all the time. And a simple please and thank you. Thank you, sir. Excuse me, sir. Could you help me with such and such? Excuse me, ma'am. Could you thank you so much?
Yeah.
I patted the hand of a waiter the other day, a waitress. She put down our check, and we had had a lovely meal. And I put my hand on hers as she put it down, and I said, thank you so much. That was lovely. Her face, oh, my God. I couldn't resist. I had to put my hand on her hand as an expression of like a handshake, except that her hand was down, my hand was on top. And I just patted her hand and said, thank you so much for such a lovely meal. Light came out of her. Light came out of her. That is what that stuff you and I talk about, Gwendolyn, which is love spread to strangers. It's so easy. It's not a challenge. I don't burn 8 calories doing it. I don't burn a calorie doing it. As a matter of fact, what happens is I leave and I feel refueled. So I didn't burn calories. I actually got fatter. I actually put on some weight. I can't believe that we are living right now in an increasingly parabolic. It's like a parabolic curve. It's not a slope. It is a parabolic curve that is now going straight up into a toxic ionosphere of hatred, venom, The situation that we're talking about now with Turkey and Syria and the Kurds, it's like no one is safe from us. Woe to the Turks or anyone else who thinks that we are a potential, that we're today's blue plate special as far as allies go. We're fit for nothing. We're fit for nothing.
Well,
the Europeans are smart enough to know it.
You know, those immigrants that you talk about, you see them every day in our communities. And you're so right with what you say. But they have still abroad this idea of America as the place to come and be free and to build the place you want to yearn to go to. And it's heartbreaking. It's
heartbreaking. It's like having a child. It's like having a three-year-old come up to you or a puppy. Their eyes are so full of open, innocent expectation and wonder. And to abuse that innocence, that openness, is to me the worst crime in the world. I talk about that all the time. Cruelty to animals and children is absolutely unforgivable. There's no redemption. There's nothing, because to wipe out that hope, to put hopelessness into that soul and have that soul crushed under that kind of hopelessness is the worst crime ever conceived. And the next closest thing to that is a person who comes to you with their hand out as a handshake, and it's like, how do you do, or hello, or whatever, and you crush them. I'm not asking that you give them your money. I'm not saying that they should be given all our charity. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying that when someone comes to us and is open to be a part of the journey that we're on, and we crush it, that is loathsome. You are damned. A person who does that is damned.
When you talk about that, when you talk about that curve that is going up, and we are about to, you know, the steam is about to express itself from the pressure. That's when change, big time change, happens. And when I hope you're right,
because the seeds of it were planted. The seeds of it were planted with Billy Bush snickering, that idiot Billy Bush, laughing outside the bus about, you know, Donald Trump and his pussy grabbing. The seeds of it were planted and seem so innocent now when Donald Trump was doing the takeoff on the physically handicapped person who had asked him a question, and he was mocking him. He had, I think, muscular dystrophy or something. He mocked him. The seeds of those things were planted ages ago. It seems like 100 years ago, and they were so innocent compared to now. To watch Donald Trump make that stupid face and to jerk his hand and be, you know, trying to imitate that gentleman, or to see him laughing about, well, you grab a woman by her pussy and they let you because you're a star. It's like when you look at that, that's the prank of a three-year-old who's been tormenting his kitten by comparison to now. He is a full-fledged psychopath, and his crimes are validated because he was elected, and he is now, you know, he has employees. He chews up his own employees. Any Republican citizen who could look at this record of the purgings he's had, the only thing he hasn't done is murdered any of them, but he's fired constantly. He's fired them. The only difference between him and Stalin is that Stalin would have them shot. Stalin wouldn't allow them to resign, nor would he fire them. They simply would be taken away and shot. So, and I must tell you, and you and I have joked about this, Gwendolyn, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe that the World Trade Center was, you know, blown up by the Israelis or the Jewish cabal or by the Rothschilds or Martians or anything else.
Saudi Arabian theorists,
But I will say this. I do believe that Jeffrey Epstein could very possibly have been gotten rid of because he was embarrassing. So I think that whole thing about he committed suicide, that's very interesting. How convenient that he would commit suicide, and how convenient that he was alone, and that he had been alone a couple of times, and that he had attempted, quote unquote, suicide before. I find the whole thing very specious. And I must tell you that we're reaching truly a crucial level. If this was a banana republic and not the United States, that person in the president's mansion would have been assassinated a long time ago, or would have been overthrown by a junta, and the military, you know, that took over would have disposed of him. People like that, they don't get away. They don't get – Ceausescu and his wife did not get away. They were dragged out and butchered, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Hitler didn't get away. He was trapped with, you know, six unfortunate friends and their poor children, you know, and a dog, and trapped in the bunker. And they didn't get away. They had to get rid of themselves because they knew that if they didn't, they'd be treated the way Mussolini and his mistress were. You know,
yeah.
And the Romanovs didn't get away. The Romanovs were caught. They had many opportunities to escape, to, you know, leave the country. They did not. They finally were captured. They were jostled around from one place to another. And eventually the oppressed people who had it with them disposed of them and threw them down a well. And the Bourbons, Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
They had plenty of time to get away. They waited too long. When they finally attempted it, the attempt failed, which sealed their fate. That infuriated the crowd. They were tried and disposed of, and their poor little boy, you know, I'm sorry, yes, he was innocent, sort of, but, you know, their poor little boy paid the price too. He was killed. It's a wonder, actually, that their daughter lived to be actually an elderly lady. She escaped and then was able to move on. But I mean, the Bourbons were disposed of left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, we're living, if this wasn't the United States, this situation would have been taken care of in a much more banana republic, Southeast Asian, you know, little country way.
I would posit that the people who will take care of it, who still hold faith with good and decent American society, the folks that you depend on to be your good neighbor, and you and me, buddy, madams, excuse me, us, we are the ones who dispose of these people by means of our vote. But then again, they call the vote into question now. I mean, it's really building up to a moment. It's going to have to be an avalanche, but I think it is. I do think we're a cosmic minute away from a paradigm shift. And you know what?
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but I keep thinking about the big difference that it made, that everybody, no matter who they were watching Archie Bunker and the social shift that Archie Bunker created. People actually became more tolerant, and the haters and began to get forced into the closet. They were no longer socially able to go out and say the things they would. And it's as if those days pre that, you know, the 50s of, you know, sit in your seat and, you know, the white fountain and the colored fountain and all the rest are being hashed back up, but we're coming to that change point again. And I don't know if it's going to be an election, an impeachment, and trial for not just one, but five of them in there right now who have been working this deal, including, did you ever think you'd hear a Republican senator express that he had no faith in the FBI or the CIA? I mean,
it's shocking.
It's very shocking. But the whistleblower that they had to pay attention to, because there have probably been other whistleblowers. I mean, there are in every administration. This is something that's SOP. But I think that the whistleblower being a spook, made the difference. He knew how to walk it into the right office and get something done. And he's not the only one. And you were talking earlier about how, why somebody just doesn't turn around like it was the guards that got Caligula. What the hell is wrong with the Treasury Department that the Secret Service can stand by and watch this? I just don't know.
Yep. Well, the movies that are significant, 7 Days in May, all those different movies that were the alarmist movies, you know, the Manchurian Candidate. I've recommended those movies again and again and again, those movies from the 1950s and early 60s that were the paranoia movies about government, Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, None Dare Call a Treason, all these different movies that were so significant about the machinations of post-war Washington, D.C., and how the government could be taken over through a coup or whatever. Those movies are significant. I can't recommend them enough. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movies, and so timely. And Turner Classic Movies has been playing them lately as if they're nod to what's going on. I want to say one thing about what you said, which was very true. It's voting. The fact that we have the vote that keeps us from becoming France in 1789 or Russia in 1918. It's the fact that we have the vote. And this is why the contamination of the American voting system, the fact that we could be, our voting could be meaningless and rendered meaningless by a dictator, is where this is okay. I mix my metaphors, but that's where the stew pot on the stove, someone bumped the knob and it's cranked it up to full and walked over to the thing and isn't noticing. If you render the vote meaningless to 300 million Americans who have nuclear weapons and AK-47s, if you render them castrated by the same way that the French were in 1789 or the Russians were in 1918, if you make it so that their vote means nothing, how soon before the people walking around with open carry in Walmart begin to just decide to shoot rock concerts like in Las Vegas or a church full of black people in South Carolina. Domestic terrorists, we are at war, but the problem is we're so busy overseas with war that we're not waging the war that's in this country. We have gangs who are armed with weapons. We have white supremacists who are armed with weapons. We have drug gangs with weapons. We are engaged in war in this country, but we keep pointing at other people saying, you're the problem, you're the problem, you're the problem. Afghanistan, Syria. And when we do it here, we point to an innocent Sikh who's walking down the street with his wife and child from a carryout at 10 o'clock at night and kill them with baseball bats because, quote unquote, they're the problem. No, they're not the problem.
You know, I would pose it to you that because I heard some backdoor conversation. I have my dark brethren friends, as you might think, from the MCs. And there are a couple of groups that are like very close to the steam bursting out and, you know, do not care for what Trump is doing to their country. And some of those MCs have in New York State, the Outlaws, and out in the West, you have Hell's Angels, and San Francisco club is, you know, I don't think people realize that some of these people are not the, you know, right wingers that you might think they are. They're very
liberal. Things have changed. Yes, you're very right, Gwendolyn. Old labels cannot be,
and
we can't adhere to them.
They will.
You're very right.
They will
you're very right.
A, They will take a name. They will. If they can figure it out and it goes too far in their eyes, they will take a name. And just as we're on, I'm watching the little IBM computer readouts, and the news has popped up that today at the deadstate.org, which is a place I never go, but it's on the little roller, the feed here, that Pat Robertson, that old bastard, said that if Trump pulled out of Syria, he's in danger of losing his mandate from heaven. Now, it's getting crazy. They're eating their own. I don't know if you've seen Fox lately.
Yep. Yep. Well, Jerry Falwell. I'm sorry. Okay. Let me just think. Pat Buchanan was on TV about 10 years ago, and he was on like MSNBC or something, and he was talking with other columnists and everything. And there was quite, I mean, I want to say that it was, I can't remember who was on, but it was a mix of people, and they were all laughing because they were starting to notice that if you bend the right wingers far enough, they join up with the extreme left wingers, that it's no longer a it's no longer a ruler or a yardstick from left to right. The extremism begins to loop around on itself, and you have survivalists at both ends of the spectrum. You have people who are building bomb shelters and filling them with beef stew and bows and arrows at both
Preppers,
ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
You have Ayn Rand and Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. You have these people that are all marginal, and you start finding out, and they don't want government. Who was the other one that didn't want government? It wasn't oh, God, he was doddering. He was kind of like Susan Collins just a couple of years ago in politics, was running for president.
Yes, I see him right now. Ross Perot, was that?
No, not Ross Perot. That's much earlier. This was only a few years ago. I'll look it up. He was a complete he was an Ayn Rand fan and was a complete what do you call her philosophy?
I know who you mean. I know who you mean. Yes. I can't think of the name.
Because I forget too many things. These people begin to say they don't want any government, and the older ones in a suit and tie seem to be reasonable, right? But then their younger members don't want government courtesy of anarchy. So it's like there's a fine line between, anarchy and being against government interference of everything. You know, it's so weird where these people go in their head.
Even in tribal life, there is a hierarchy. And there's always, one of the stories that captured me as a child and has stayed close to me as the Arthurian legends. And it's might for right. And that idea of the round table was, the Magna Carta kind of thing that became the Constitution, that there is an evolution that will happen in the next 50 years. And I think that our Constitution will either be amended or readapted or something. It has to be. But the Bill of Rights has to be amended and adapted, and it for the better, for the light, not the darkness.
Exactly.
I do not think the dark is going to win this, not one bit. And I think that we can depend on young people. What I have seen of young people and the kids today, I'm so amazed and so proud. And kids in college for the last 10 years who have been coming up with ways to supply supply the energy to a community just from waves reaching the shoreline. I mean, the architecture and the engineering quality of these young minds. Well, they grew up with all these other wonderful talents that you and I had to acquire in life with hand-eye coordination through technology and all of that, but they adapted to it immediately. And there's another thing that happened about 25, 28 years ago. Children were being born regularly with more brain turned on than we were born with, as if they had gone through that trauma of the veil and the oxygen, you know, shutting down and turning more of the mechanism on, because the brain is not where the real stuff goes on, but it's just the mechanism. Yet if you have more of a mechanism to work with, you're going to be fundamentally more able and applicable to whatever comes, you know. Think of it. I mean, the best of us, 7 to 8%, and they're being born with 12 and 11% of brain turned on, with the ability to turn more of it on in my community. But
right.
It's just work.
You know,
that's what's happening.
What I was trying, it was so funny, I was drawing a blank there. It's laissez-faire capitalism. It's the whole thing of restrictions on anything.
Yeah.
To just let the market do what it wants, and to let, quote-unquote, the survival of the fittest, which means the survival of the most carnivorous, really. You know, if you have enough money, you hire your own army, and you simply take over the country, and you wipe out your adversaries.
Very libertarian. The
doddering, dizzy Susan Collins candidate was in 2008. It was Ron Paul. Remember Ron Paul?
Ron Paul, yes.
Yeah, if you saw him, it was like you see that face and you can hear his voice. And he was this chuckly, you know, nice guy. And he was sort of giggly and expressing his feelings and everything. It's not Rand Paul, it's Ron Paul. And he was totally a true laissez-faire capitalistic. Yeah. Well, anyway, the show's almost over. Why don't we end on a high note and a happy note? Do you have anything that you want to, I got a question this week. I'm trying to scroll. Oh, I found it. Why don't we each take a minute and say something? Do you have wifely advice? Do you have some, I mean, you're so good at all of these like potions and things. Is there something that you, we've already recommended what they should get on daughtersofisis.com, which is the heart chakra fragrance. Is that correct? Did I say it right?
Yes. You did. And I
is there something,
posted it,
is there something that you would like to recommend? I'm going to give my cure for hiccups again, because people always say, oh, Sybil, tell the cure for hiccups. So I'm going to do that. What's something that you can tell them that's something they can take away with them until next Monday when we're on again?
If you are faced with a great deal of anxiety right now, which so many of us are, you know, it's not just, and it's not you in many circumstances, it's community, it's an emotional blanket that is across the country and across the world. But what you can do is, and this is very simple, an Epsom salt bath, and just get in, because bathing is healing. When you get into the element of water, you are completely protected and your body is nurtured. So,
I can't agree with you more. And light some candles.
And put some rose quartz if you have it, and it's really inexpensive, and there's plenty of places you can find it online and in your community. Rose quartz crystal or rose quartz tumbled stones. You put that in your bath water with you, and it vibrates the essential vibration of love and peace. So that would be my suggestion.
And all I've been doing is Epsom salts. I really have got to go get some rose quartz and make it much better. That's a wonderful hint. Folks, light candles, turn off the lights. Do not have lights glaring in your face when you're in a bathtub, and put on the music that makes you feel lovely, lovely music that renews and restores your soul. And take that time. And Gwendolyn is so right. A bath, water. It's first of all, you're returning to the womb.
Yes.
That's what a bath is. You're returning to the womb. You're turning to a dark, wet, safe, as much as possible weightless place. No, it's not completely weightless unless you went to a sensory deprivation tank with, you know, the Dead Sea salt in it, in which you literally do float in a bathtub and you don't touch the bottom and or the sides. But short of that, getting into a nice warm bath by candlelight with music and everything, you're getting back into the womb. And you also are going beyond that. You're going back to the great ocean, which is where we all are from. We are salt water. And Isak Dennison was right. Salt water is the cure for anything. Tears,
yes.
Sweat, or the ocean. Salt water, water in general. Get into warm water and breathe and close your eyes and find some peace. Thank you. You know what? I don't think I have better advice than that. Yes.
It's called self-love, and it's so necessary. We're Americans, damn it. We can do self-love. We can. And if it's pressing on you right now, be heartened by just your own good sense of self and the goodness you carry within. We all do. And
I know that people out there right now are going to say, well, self-love, I mean, Donald Trump self-love. No. It's like what I was saying earlier about venting your, getting your emotions out and tantruming. There's a big difference between taking a stand and tantruming. There's a big difference between self-love and self-adulation. We have way too much self-adulation in the United States and not enough self-love. People who love themselves and love each other and love people around them and love the stranger that's holding out the hand to shake are not interested in saying, in my incredible wisdom as the most incredibly person, whatever that new thing he came up with, that sound bite today. You know what? His sound bite bites crap. That's what his sound bite does. It bites feces. So what we need is self-love. We need to learn how to love ourselves so we're not worshiping ourselves. The big difference. I'm going to just say my quick, because we're really down to the minute. Hiccup cure. If you have hiccups, very simple. If you're in a restaurant, get a couple of sugar packs. If you're not in a restaurant and you're near your sugar bowl, take a teaspoon of sugar. Mary Poppins was right. Just a spoonful of sugar. You put a spoonful of sugar under your tongue. Don't swallow it. Don't chew it. Don't do anything. Hold it there and let it dissolve in your saliva. Let it stay there until it literally melts away. It'll take about 60 seconds to fully melt away. What will happen is the sugar will actually short-circuit the short circuit of your hiccuping. So you're going to short-circuit a short circuit. That's how it works. It is not a myth. It's not you holding your breath or drinking water and plugging your nose. It is a chemical reaction that happens. Diabetics, I'm sorry. Mummy's trying to help you. You'll have to adjust the sugar accordingly. But for the rest of us, a spoonful of sugar will get rid of the hiccups. It's a sure thing. Actors have been doing it for 200 years. Politicians have known about it forever when they have to get up and speak. Sugar under your tongue. Remember, let it melt. I am going to say a quick thank you to some friends who've been writing in with suggestions. Yuri Kushner, Steve Buescher, Patrick Hoy, Jimmy Rassiopi, Elaine Zena, Ricky Cook, Aditi and the gang over at Cowgirl Hall of Fame Restaurant, Bob Gutowski, Geffel Tefish, Jay Rogers, and of course my own Mr. Payamas, George Brescia. And of course, how could I do the show without my genius muse, Gwendolyn Holdenberry, and our sponsors, DaughtersOfIsis.com. Do check out their website. And remember that we'll be back here on Monday, next Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. We're still on Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. And I want to remind you that I can be found on SybilSays.com, SybilBrunchen.com, and the Lollipop Guild, Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild on Facebook. And also, DaughtersOfIsis.com has their own page on Facebook as well. We'll address some new issues next week. We've got lots of stuff to talk about.
Don't forget, you can find Sybil Brunchen on Instagram.
Yep, and Twitter. That's right. I'm branching out. And I do want to encourage you to come to my SybilSays.com because we've got announcements there. And I want to remind you, and I will be announcing next week, Mummy is doing a show very soon with her friend Pansy and a couple of other famous performers. We're going to be releasing the show this fall. More details later, but I just saw we're out of time. Gwendolyn, I'll see you Monday, next Monday. I love you, love you, love you. Will you take us out with our jingle?
I love you, Mommy. I will right now. I love you, Mommy.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Gwendolyn.